name is Richard Forston, and with me at council's table is my associate Jennifer Becknell-Guzzo. Also with us in the audience today is our summer associate Nicole Alling. Your Honors, the facts of this case are not terribly complicated, and nor for that matter is the law. And yet two amicus briefs have been filed in this case by eight organizations, all in support of my client, and demonstrating, I think, that while this case may be relatively simple on its facts and the law, its consequences are nevertheless quite important. Our client, Tony Ashburn, Inc., submitted a subdivision plan to Kent County. It was for 214 houses on 252 acres, so that's a density of roughly 0.8 units an acre, which in the real estate world is a relatively low-density, low-impact development. It adjoins a similar residential development of approximately 150 houses, and the two are going to be interconnected. The plan complies with all of the applicable regulations set forth in the Kent County Subdivision Code, and no one disputes that fact, and in fact the Superior Court noted that fact in its opinion. Nevertheless, despite this compliance, the Planning Commission and the Levy Court both rejected the plan and complied with their code, but they rejected the plan anyway. We appealed to Superior Court, and the Superior Court upheld that denial, I think, for some unfortunate reasons, which obviously I'll be discussing, and we believe the Superior Court's decision, which is contrary to every previous decision in this area and on this topic, should be reversed. Now, depending on where we were in the process, we heard various reasons. It seemed like they were always changing as to why this plan should have been rejected. But as demonstrated in our briefs, none of those reasons, I believe, has merits.
Let me interrupt you for a minute, because I don't know that the particular reasons are as important as the concept, if you will. If a proposed subdivision is presented to the authorities, and granted it meets all the technical requirements, but it's going to cause enormous traffic problems. you're saying that, well, that's too bad. Whoever builds the roads is just going to have to build more roads because we're entitled to have this subdivision. Or if it's undisputed that the only local school is already at capacity, and either there would have to be significant expense to transport all these new students to a faraway school, or a new school would have to be built, and again, the local district would have to pay for that. You seem to be saying that as long as the subdivision plan requirements are met, then all the infrastructure that goes with a development, the various responsible entities just have to cough up the money and build it. Is that basically where you're leading us?
Yes, it is. And let me briefly explain why, or preview why, because in that regard it shows why the reasons do matter. Who's to say how much traffic capacity or how much traffic a project generates is too much or too little?
Well, wait a second. What I'm trying to avoid that issue by saying, let's assume that it's undisputed that this will cause a traffic problem, that this will cause there to be more cars on the neighboring roads than what the current capacity of those roads are, and that nobody questions that. Just like nobody questions that this meets all the subdivision requirements. Let's assume that there is either an undisputed traffic problem or school problem or, fire service problem, whatever, but that there's no question about it. That is the result of what the subdivision will bring. Then what?
Well, the answer, I believe, is the plan should be approved, subject to reasonable conditions that lessen the impact of that particular plan. But Kent County, or any governmental body for that matter, has a choice. It can put objective standards in that are fairly applied to all property owners, or It can be silent on a particular issue, but if it's silent on an issue, it can't then let that issue pop up later on with respect to your project, but not to your project. And one of the things that we cited in our briefs, it was brought to the court's attention by one of the amicus, or amici, was the fact that we got a letter from the Smyrna School District that said, gee, a referendum just failed. We really can't take any more students from any more developments, so don't allow any more development, or we'd prefer if you don't let there be any more development. Another project, same time frame, in the summer of 2006, got exactly the same letter. Our project got rejected. That project got approved. Smyrna doesn't have school capacity, according to both letters. And so you can't just allow open-ended discretion. The reason that you put objective standards in place is so that property owners know what they can do with their property and can assign a value to it and can make plans accordingly. And
okay,
if
so are you saying that the regulations governing subdivisions should include specific requirements with respect to traffic and infrastructure and schools and things like that, so that everybody would have to prove that their plan would survive that analysis, and then it would be okay to look at these things? Is that it?
Yes, Kent County can do that, and in fact, with respect to schools and traffic, in the spring of 2007, they did exactly that. They adopted school standards, they adopted traffic standards, and I think we've cited those provisions in our brief. Those ordinances that they adopted do not apply to my client's projects by the very terms of that ordinance. So Kent County has adopted standards respecting schools, respecting traffic, but those standards do not apply to my client's project. And, in fact, even if they had tried to retroactively apply those standards to my client's project, we would have argued that under the doctrine of vested rights, which holds that, you know, a change in a requirement can't be applied retroactively to a project that's, you know, spent a lot of money in good faith, under that doctrine they couldn't have applied it anyway. But that doctrine of vested rights would be meaningless if a governmental body was free to impose ad hoc requirements or different requirements on a case-by-case basis, perhaps depending on political opposition. You know, 100 people show up to oppose a project. Any creative lawyer worth his salt can come up with 5 or 6 bad impacts from a project.
Okay, so let me just be clear that I understand where we are right now. You're advocating that your client should get approval because at the time that your client put in the subdivision plan, none of these extra ordinances were in place that provided standards for schools and traffic, right?
Your Honor, I am advocating that, and I believe that is the law in this state.
Okay, wait a sec. And that what's more, if your client had put in the subdivision plan last week instead of a couple of years ago, then it would be appropriate under the new ordinances for the authorities to say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, until we've got better roads or until we've got more school capacity, your plan doesn't meet our standards. That would be a valid approach if it were being done now.
They could apply those particular ordinances to a plan that is submitted today, yes. I think the concerns over traffic are overblown in this particular case anyway, because, you know, DLDOT did review a TIS and did approve it, but certainly with respect to schools, under the ordinance as it is currently in place, this project would not be allowed to proceed, and nor would any project in the Smyrna School District. And just as a quick aside, I have limited time, but Newcastle County adopted a similar ordinance prohibiting new subdivision approval where a school district lacked capacity or said it lacked capacity under formulas generated by the state 10 years ago when it first adopted the Unified Development Code. And that requirement was so onerous, it prevented a property owner in Red Clay, which is the school district we happen to represent, it prohibited a property owner of 5 acres from building 7 houses on his 5 acres because the school district lacked capacity. The General Assembly passed a statute actually preempting and eviscerating that school capacity requirement in Newcastle County, which was the only county that had a such a requirement at the time, because with due respect to the levy court, I think it's bad public policy. You don't build empty schools and then wait for the neighborhoods to be built around that empty school. You don't build a school with 20 classrooms and no students for those classrooms. Historically, schools get crowded. We build a new school. That school gets crowded. You build a new school. It's just traditionally the way it's always happened. There's really nothing different about this, except now people are, in my view, trying to use school capacity as a means to slow down development, because there's this perception that development is bad, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, the population grows and people need places to live. But I digressed a little bit, and I apologize for that. Delaware courts, as I said, have consistently and uniformly held that if a plan complies, it's subject to approval, subject to only such reasonable conditions as might lessen the adverse impact of that particular project. And the courts themselves have said it much more eloquently than I have. And I think perhaps Vice Chancellor Strine said it best when he said simply, if compliance with the established limits is problematic, the solution is to change the general limitations through appropriate legislation, altering zoning districts and the comprehensive plan, not for council to subject property owners to an ad hoc decision in a quasi-judicial proceeding, imposing on them a standard somewhat indefinably short of the legislatively established limits of general applicability, but reserving for itself the right to permit other, more popular applicants to proceed on the less onerous terms set forth in the code and the comprehensive plan. And in fact, that's what you see. The levy court here said, well, no school capacity in Smyrna, your plan is rejected. But another subdivision plan in Smyrna got approved, notwithstanding that same lack of capacity.
Did they give reasons for the other approval? The statute that they rely on in both cases says if you disagree with the comments, you have to give your reasons. So when they approved the other plan over the school's objections, what did they say?
Your Honor, I do not know if they said anything. I can certainly find out and let the court know after oral argument.
But isn't that what the statute provides?
The statute provides that if a planning agency makes recommendations inconsistent with information, they are supposed to inform the agency why they did that. And as we said in our brief, the answer, I think, is easy. The code allows this plan to proceed. In our case, DENREC gave a comment that said, we've got these environmental concerns, and while it may be possible to mitigate those concerns, the best way to address our environmental concerns is simply not to do the project.
Well, let's go back to the schools for a moment before we get to DENREC. There's some debate in the brief that the school's only concern should be commenting on the location of bus stops.
Yes.
Is that accurate, or is it proper and permissible for the school to talk about overcrowding, school district?
Kent County's code specifically says that when they get a subdivision plan, they're going to ask a school district, the applicable school district, for comments with respect to the location of bus stops, and their code specifically refers to bus stops. So under the Kent County Code, that's what they're essentially limited to. Title IX, the state code provision, doesn't. It just says that planning agency or the county shall request information from agencies and school districts. And it's just information. It's not opinion. It's not preferences. They're just supposed to request information. So, for example, the State Historic Preservation Office may note that there's a historic structure somewhere on the property, the old farmhouse, to the extent it's possible. That should be, we'd prefer if that be saved, or you plan to save that. DENREC might note in its comments that there's wetlands, and, you know, obviously that kicks in a lot of additional regulations regarding wetlands at the federal level. I believe that the section of the code was designed to help in the planning process in terms of actually designing the physical layout of the subdivision and addressing issues early, spotting issues, if you will, so that they can be accounted for early in the process. It was never meant, and I think it's completely unfair to suggest that information supplied by a state agency can lead to the imposition of wholly new requirements that aren't set forth anywhere in the code.
Do you want to save your remaining 5 minutes?
Unless your honors have questions at this time, I will save my time. Thank you.
Mr. Shannon, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. On behalf of the respondents, Kent County Regional Planning Commission, Kent County Levy Court, and their Honorable Commissioner Scott Shannon. Also with me at council table is Bill Pepper, my co-counsel. I think it is important in the court's consideration of the issues presented that the name of the first represented body is repeated, because its name is not the Kent County Subdivision Approval Commission. It is the Kent County Regional Planning Commission. And it is a creature of statute under Title IX, Chapter 48, created by the General Assembly for the specific purpose of providing for the general health, safety, welfare, and prosperity of the citizens of Kent County, and a coordinated plan of development consistent with those factors. That is the statutory task of the Regional Planning Commission. Chapter 48 does not restrict the factors that the Regional Planning Commission can consider, but it does allow that when a subdivision plan comes in, the Regional Planning Commission has four choices. It can approve, approve with conditions, table, or disapprove the application. And that's 9 Delaware Code, Section 4813, I believe it is. And it is that statutory charge that allows the Kent County Regional Planning Commission to specifically disapprove a subdivision plan that is not consistent with its police powers, the limited police powers with which it's vested under 9 Delaware Code, Section 4802A, which makes the result here appropriate. And the factors that were considered by the Regional Planning Commission in reaching that result to fall within the substantial evidence standard, which this court reviews the decisions of the Kent County Regional Planning.
Tell us again the particular statute that authorizes the Planning Commission to reject a subdivision proposal.
I will, Your Honor. It's Chapter 48.
What title of the Delaware Code and what's that?
Title 9. 4802 is the enabling provision, and if I may read, quote, for the purpose of promoting health, safety, prosperity, and general welfare, as well as for the purpose of securing coordinated plans for roads, residential developments, water supplies, and other improvements and utilities, a department known as the Regional Planning Commission of Kent County is created.
I'm asking you which statute creates specific authority in the commission to reject a subdivision application.
Yes, Your Honor. 9 Delaware Code, Section 4811. The commission shall approve, approve with conditions, disapprove, or table a plat within 45 days after acceptance.
Now, the final authority is the levy court. Is that correct?
Not under the Kent County statutory scheme, Your Honor, and there is a difference between 9 Delaware Code Chapters 48 and 49, Chapter 48 being the chapter which creates and empowers the Regional Planning Commission, Chapter 49, which vests in the levy court the authority to enact both zoning regulations and to create zoning districts. And that is different and distinguishable from the same provisions within, actually they're not the same, but the corollary provisions within Title IX for Newcastle County. And
well, just an outline briefly in the scheme that we're reviewing. One way to look at it traditionally would be the Superior Court reviewed the action of the levy court, and the levy court acted based on what the Regional Planning Commission had done. To the extent that's inaccurate, tell us why the levy court was involved at all.
I will, Your Honor. The levy court was involved because under the Kent County Code, and it's Chapter 187-45, I believe, but don't quote me on that, the appeal right under the Kent County Code from a decision of the Regional Planning Commission is to the levy court.
However, what are we reviewing here? We have to, as you know, in Mr. Forston's brief, he said, in his view, he got 9 reasons for the denial, mm-hmm. and the ones from the Planning Commission were not necessarily the same as the levy court. So on appeal, when we're reviewing the denial, whose reasons are we reviewing?
We're reviewing the Regional Planning Commission's reasons, Your Honor.
So the reasons the levy court gave are totally irrelevant to our consideration.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the reason that is, if I may expand on that, because here again, this is where Kent County's review process is unique and distinguishable from Newcastle County's and Sussex County's. In Newcastle County, the Department of Land Use makes the decisions and forwards the plans to the Newcastle County Council. And Newcastle County Council has 3 options. They may approve with conditions, or they may table the application and refer it back to Department of Land Use for clarification of compliance with local ordinances or state laws or federal laws, but they only may do that twice. There is no option either in the Newcastle County provisions of Title IX nor within the Newcastle County Code unless they've amended it, which allows County Council in Newcastle to disapprove a subdivision application. Similarly, the scheme set up for under Title IX, Chapter 69 and 70, for Sussex County's operation of its planning commission, County Planning Commission, and its review process is different. And one of the differences that stand out is for Kent County's Regional Planning Commission, 9 Delaware Code, Section 4818, provides a statutory right of appeal for a statutory writ of certiorari from a decision of the Regional Planning Commission to Superior Court. I believe it's Regional Planning Commission or Levy Court for decisions made under Title IX, Chapter 48. That is unique in the Delaware Code. The closest analog is the statutory right of appeal from Boards of Adjustments decisions under both Title IX for each county, which all 3 have that, and under Title 22 for municipalities' Boards of Adjustments. However, Boards of Adjustments deal with zoning code issues.
Well, we can sort that out. I don't want to use up your time on the procedures. I just want your view on what it is we're reviewing on appeal. And as I understand, your view is we don't even have to read what the levy court did or any explanation the levy court gave.
That's correct.
This is simply our court looking at the reasons given by the Regional Planning Commission.
The standard for a statutory writ of certiorari where there is an intermediate appellate body is the ultimate reviewing tribunal, this court, looks to the original decision which was rendered and determines whether and reviews the entire record.
All right, now I understand that's your view. Tell me now, if Mr. Forston's client says to the Regional Planning Commission, what do I have to do to go forward? I've complied with everything. You're telling me that I can't do anything until the state decides to build some highways or Smyrna decides to build some schools. And until then, I just have to use my land for farming or something else. Is that what the answer is? That the total control on whether this subdivision will ever take place is completely dependent on the state's decision to build roads and Smyrna's decision to build schools.
Complete control. I'm not sure, Your Honor, that the answer is complete control. And if I can illustrate.
All right, we'll go back then. Just tell me the answer to the question, then explain it. Mr. Forston's client says, all right, what do I need to do to go forward with this subdivision? What's the answer, and then explain it?
The answer to the question is actually provided within the subsequently enacted ordinances.
No, but That doesn't apply to his client.
And it doesn't apply to
his client wants to know what he has to do.
And the answer is that this town that appellant proposed to build, 214 homes, 530 people. And to illustrate, there are 17 incorporated municipalities within Kent County. And this development would have been larger than all but...
Agreed.
Okay.
Just tell me what his client has to do to go forward.
He would have to provide the infrastructure. For example, the road improvements, he would have to provide for the increase in school capacity.
But not within the boundaries of the farm. As I understand it, the concerns were external.
The concerns were external, Your Honor.
So he would have to build state roads.
He would have to fund the
building of state roads.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And he would have to fund the Smyrna schools.
Would have to build new buildings for the Smyrna schools?
He would have to fund the construction of those buildings, Your Honor. And that is consistent. That is consistent with the General Assembly's directive. Not only through...
Okay, I just wanted the answer.
Yes.
And that all of that flows from the authority conferred by Section 4811?
This is a police powers exercise, Your Honor. Yes.
The answer is yes?
Yes, Your Honor.
What in Section 4811, which is what I understand to be the linchpin of your legal argument, what guidance does 4811 give in terms of articulating criteria for disapproval?
The articulated criteria, Your Honor, are in 4802A, which is the considerations of the general health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Kent County.
Does 4811 incorporate 4802A by reference?
4802 being the enabling authority.
You said the criteria are set forth, and I thought you said 4802A.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The criteria set forth in the enabling provision, which is 4802A. That is correct.
My question is Section 4802A incorporated by reference into Section 4811?
It's part of the same chapter.
I'm asking whether it's explicitly incorporated by reference.
No, Your Honor, it's not. Under Article 2, Section 25 of the Delaware Constitution, it's provided that the enactment and enforcement of the zoning authority shall deem to be within the police power of the state.
If the Planning Commission, if counsel for the Planning Commission wanted to look for the statute for guidance in terms of how it would go about making a decision to disapprove, where would it look?
Within the statute, Your Honor?
Within the statute.
4802.
And how would it know to look there?
Chapter 48 of Title IX is the enabling statutory provisions that guide the Regional Planning Commission in the performance of its duties. And for the Regional Planning Commission to approve a subdivision application in which it could not determine and could not make the finding that approval of the subdivision would not be contrary to the general health, safety, welfare, and prosperity of the citizens of Kent County, it would be a violation of their statutory duty. It would be a betrayal of the public trust with which they're imposed.
Well, how could it be a betrayal of the public trust if, as I understand the historical facts, a similar request was approved, notwithstanding the fact that Smyrna School District complained that there wasn't enough schools for them either?
Each case must stand or fall on its own merits. This court previously, and again, I believe the closest analog is...
I just want an answer to my question. How can it be okay to approve a subdivision in one case where Smyrna says we don't have school capacity and not okay in another case where Smyrna says we don't have school capacity?
The petitioners can point to any number of cases, and I'm trying to address Your Honor's question head on, where in this instance, for example, the state strategies for spending were insufficient to deny an application. In this instance, school capacity is insufficient. I am not here prepared to argue what took place with the other subdivision applications because they're not properly before the court. What we do know is in this case, it wasn't just school capacity, Your
right.
Honor. It was.
I understand that there were a host of reasons
that's correct.
Why this application was denied.
That's correct.
The problem that I'm having as part of a reviewing court is that our general sense of fairness would make us more comfortable if when you have an infrastructure problem facing one developer and the same infrastructure problem facing another, that they both get treated the same way. And you're saying, well, this one had a lot more problems. So, in other words, if it were just Smyrna School District saying we didn't have enough space, then these people would be approved?
Your Honor, when the hypothetical posed is that everyone be treated the same way, it presupposes that the proposed subdivisions are identical, which is, frankly, impossible. They can't be located in the same place. They can't be
we understand
affecting
that.
The same roads. They're not of the same size. And this court has repeatedly recognized, I believe most recently in the NRA 244.5 acres land to village case, that the modern subdivision regulatory process is complex and multi-level. And this court has also recognized, I'm sorry, not this court, but Chancery Court, when the Chief Justice was a Vice Chancellor, wrote a decision, Hundley versus O'Donnell, stating the subdivision of land is not a judicial function, but rather a multidiscipline function involving a significant level of expertise and action by an elected body, acting alternatively in administrative, judicial, ministerial capacities, legislative. At some point, the Regional Planning Commission, under its exercise of its police powers, is tasked with making a decision of, this is okay, this is too much. A line has to be drawn. And that line is drawn in the exercise of their discretion. Appellant used the phrase open-ended discretion. I don't know what is open-ended discretion. Judges are vested with discretion, and if they abuse their discretion, it's called an abuse of discretion standard. And the best description of an appropriate exercise of discretion that I could find was from an older decision of this court, Radio Corp of America versus Philadelphia Storage Battery Company, stating the essence of judicial discretion is the exercise of judgment directed by conscience and reason as opposed to capricious or arbitrary action. Where a court has not exceeded the bounds of reason in view of all the circumstances and has not so ignored recognized rules of law or practices to produce substantial injustice, its legal discretion has not been abused. And that's as good a definition to apply to the discretion vested in the Regional Planning Commission.
Well, give us an example. Let's narrow down all the variables simply to the school. And you have a situation where Smyrna says, we can't take any more students. And the Regional Planning Commission approves the development in one case and denies it in the other. How would they properly exercise their discretion to approve one when Smyrna says we don't have any more capacity?
Your Honor, taking...
And the reason I'm asking the question is because it assumes the Regional Planning Commission could decide to exercise its discretion in an opposite way that Smyrna wants it exercised, and you would defend that. And if that's not the case, if there's no answer to my hypothetical, then we're back to the situation where Smyrna basically decides when there'll be future development in Kent County based on when they pass a referendum to build more schools. So is it the Smyrna School District that's going to control subdivision development or the Regional Planning Commission? And if it's the Regional Planning Commission, how do they exercise their discretion contrary to the Smyrna lack of capacity?
The Smyrna lack of capacity was but one factor.
No, that's my hypothetical is that's the only factor.
If your hypothetical is the only factor, I would submit to the court that while I would arguably find myself at the podium defending my client's decision, I don't know that it would be a defensible exercise of their discretion.
So then, if we narrow it down to school capacity as the only factor, the Planning Commission has no discretion to exercise.
I disagree, Your Honor. I believe they have the discretion to exercise, but the issue then would be the same issue before the court. Have they appropriately exercised their discretion in this instance to allow the subdivision to proceed?
Well, that's my question. And you seem to suggest that if Smyrna says we have no capacity, mm-hmm. you would have a hard time defending your client's decision to authorize a subdivision. Is that correct?
The specific facts of the case presented would control, because if it's well, one element and one element
we're
only.
We're out of time.
I am, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I thank the court for its time.
Your Honor, a lot to try to respond to in a short amount of time, but that's, of course, always the case. The Radio Corp case that Mr. Shannon mentioned wasn't cited in the briefs, either to this court or the court below, so I'm not familiar with that case at all. I don't really think it's applicable, though. What I heard Mr. Shannon tell you is that only the reasons offered by the Planning Commission matter and the reasons offered by the levy court don't matter. Also knew none of the reasons, I think, justify denial, so I don't really care what reasons this court necessarily considers. I just don't think any of the reasons proffered by any of the bodies mattered. Mr. Shannon struggled with Your Honor's question, and he should have struggled because there is no correct answer to it. The whole purpose and reason behind the line of cases that existed before this particular case, two of which this court has affirmed, say that you need to have objective criteria and standards in place to review a plan. And it's precisely to avoid this notion that some plans are going to get approved and some plans aren't going to get approved, notwithstanding the facts are the same for both. And the school district case happens to be a prime example of that. And obviously, I thank the amicus for bringing that to the court's attention. But it's easily the case that there could be others. I mean, we're told traffic is a problem in this area, yet we had a traffic impact study that DLDOT reviewed and approved, and nobody has pointed to any failure of traffic capacity in this area. There's another community of 150 homes right next door. Why did that project get approved, but this project won't get approved? There just need to be standards put in place. Levy Court, incidentally, has now done that. And so going forward, to the extent Levy Court thought there was a problem, it's addressed that problem.
Well, let me try and clarify something you just said about if there's a similar subdivision right next door, that somehow that means that your subdivision ought to be approved as well. Isn't part of the whole process designed to set limits and say, okay, well, you know, before we had these three subdivisions, and they when they were all farms, then we had much less traffic and much less demand on our infrastructure. But now that we've got these three, to add a fourth would really put us over the top. I mean, isn't it appropriate to look at what's already there and then say, you know, maybe if you had come before this last one, you would have been approved, but now you're being denied because we've gotten too congested. Isn't that an appropriate position to take?
It is an appropriate position to take, provided that you say in advance what is too congested or what is the existing remaining capacity. You can't make it up as you go along, because you can look at what happened in the Landings, which is another subdivision that the levy court or the amicus brought to this court's attention, where there were comments there about the plan simply not being the most efficient use of resources. And since that's a provision in the Kent County Subdivision Code, general language, but you can nevertheless hang your hat on that as a reason to reject the plan. In that particular plan, there was concern expressed by DENREC not about any environmental condition on the property, but on the neighboring properties. There were environmentally sensitive areas, and so the levy court was suggested to Kent County by DENRAC that we've got concerns about other properties in the area, so don't allow development of this property. We put objective standards in place because we're supposed to be fair to all property owners, and they need to know in advance what they can or they can't do, or else the system is just meaningless. And all I need is a single sheet of paper that says health, safety, and welfare. I forget how many times, because I lost track, I heard Mr. Shannon say that both at oral argument and in his brief. But if all the standard is health, safety, and welfare, I don't need an inch-thick subdivision code. I don't need an inch-thick zoning code. Just, you know, bring us a plan and we'll look at it, and if it meets our notions of health, safety, and welfare on that particular day, maybe we'll approve it, maybe we won't.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The court found your arguments and briefs to be helpful. We'll take the matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.